We call this show the myth of meritocracy because there's a belief in sports that all that matters is talent and hard work.
It makes me laugh. It really does. Only because we cling to the myth of meritocracy so much, despite all evidence to the contrary.
That's Amira Rose Davis again. When she talks about this, she likes to use track and field as a metaphor.
Set.
It's really easy to look at the starting line of a 100-meter race and feel like everybody has an equitable chance. I think that's really seductive. But we know that the person at the one position might have better spikes, might have better grips, might have had a lifetime of access to resources that have conditioned them to be where they are. And the person next to them might just be there on raw talent. Sport is of this world, and our world is deeply, deeply inequitable. And that's just the facts.
And when it comes to youth sports, those inequities are actually growing. Here's Only a Game's Jonathan Chang.
When Otto Lowy was 8 or 9 years old, his mom signed him up for youth baseball. He had already been playing soccer, but why not try another sport? That first season, Otto made the All-Star team. But that came at a cost, literally. Being an All-Star meant more travel and higher fees. So Otto's mom gave him an ultimatum.
She was like, listen, you're really good at both sports, but you got to pick one. Just pick a sport, whatever you want. We'll make the most of it, and I think you'll be amazing at it.
Otto chose soccer, but this issue of young athletes having to give up sports because of money, it happens all the time.
Kids at really young ages get weeded out, and there's sort of this haves versus have-nots, depending on how much money you have.
John Solomon of the Aspen Institute gathers data on youth sports.
You know, we have research that shows that kids who are from lower income households are far more likely to not be playing sports on a regular basis compared to higher income households.
And for Otto, even sticking with just soccer was going to be tough. As he got older, the costs rose. This was back in the late 90s. And Otto says he was paying around $2,000 a season as a middle schooler. When he got to high school,
then you're looking at upwards of like $2,500, $3,000.
Unlike a lot of kids facing rising costs, Otto was able to arrange another way to pay.
From eighth grade on to my senior year, me and my mom would paint soccer fields Friday night prior to the Saturday-Sunday games. So that's like about 6 or 7 fields, just me and her, because that was the only way I was going to be able to play.
Otto's story represents a growing problem.
Over the course of the past, say, 30 years, we've had a defunding of sports within our communities and school systems.
That's the University of Oklahoma's Dr. Kirsten Heckstrom. She studies race and college sports.
But a parallel occurrence has happened alongside that, which is we've had an increase of private sports clubs popping up to replace what once was done by low-cost recreational or school sports.
And there's a reason families sometimes go to extreme lengths to try and give their kids an opportunity to participate in these programs.
Even basketball and football, which are the two sports that still remain the most common sports sponsored across schools in America, you aren't becoming a college basketball star just by playing high school basketball. You have to be joining these travel teams, these AAU teams.
Even after Otto and his mom found a way to pay for high-level soccer, there were moments when people tried to make him feel like he didn't belong. One time,
I forgot my water bottle, and a teammate of mine, he was like, hey, I'll give him an extra bottle for my little brother. Like, cool, thank you so much, really appreciate it. So I'm drinking the water, talking to like the 2-year-old kid, just like helping me out. And as I'm walking away, I remember vividly the parent literally was like, never drink from that black boy again, ever in your life. To the 2-year-old kid who has no idea what's going on, waste the water out completely. And I look back and I watch it all unfold and I'm just like, wow. And then mind you, there are numerous occasions where little rich white kids to try to get underneath my nerve would just pull out the N-word as much as they can to get me riled up. So that was just a normal occasion.
Growing up in a predominantly black neighborhood in inner city Atlanta, Otto didn't just get the sense that he didn't belong in soccer from white families. He also got it from the black community.
It was the Michael Jordan era. And in my community, they were like, you don't have to play soccer. Like, that's not a sport for you. That's for the rich white kids up north. You need to play football or basketball with us.
The people saying this to Otto, they might have thought they had his best interest at heart. After all, in the U.S., there's more money in those sports. And in a society that's so stacked against them and their children, black parents, according to an Aspen Institute study, are more likely than white parents to view youth sports as a means to an end. Here's John Solomon again.
So parents of African-American youth rated the pursuit of a college scholarship as 23% more important than white parents, and a pro sports opportunity as 26% more important.
That's a form of internalized oppression that black families may not even be cognizant of that they're engaging in.
Derek Jackson writes about sports and race for ESPN's The Undefeated.
So black families at some point end up, okay, this is what society's telling me my kid is going to have the best shot at doing. Because let's face it, in American society, the way our society is set up, the most, quote, positive image we get of black men is when they are playing ball.
Professor Scott Brooks of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University says when young athletes make sports their main priority, that can have a much longer-term consequence.
They've put everything else to the side. They're not as focused on school or school only as it pertains to keeping them eligible. They're not pursuing creative things like art, music, even so much. This is everything. And when that ends, and often not of your own volition, all of these things that are senses of your purpose, that goes away.
Eventually, Otto did earn an athletic scholarship to play soccer at Winthrop University in South Carolina. And in 2011, he signed an MLS contract with the New England Revolution. Unlike the vast majority of kids who devote themselves to sports, Otto actually did make it to the pros. It looked like the years of investment might actually pay off. But then he injured his back.
I had like a ruptured disc between my L4, L5, and I was released.
Otto played one season in the MLS. He made just $42,000. Later, Otto got a job as a marketing analyst. On top of that, he started coaching youth soccer. In 2016, he became an assistant coach for the Atlanta United Academy. In a country where youth sports is dominated by the pay-to-play model, this was supposed to be different. MLS academies cover most financial needs, except transportation. Not travel, the bus rides and flights for out-of-town competition, but getting from home to the team facility in downtown Atlanta and back. Otto says that some of the academy's players didn't have easy access to public transportation or parents who have time to drive them to practice.
I put my hand up. I said, I will go pick them up myself, and I will drive them there.
And another coach offered to drive them back. Without Otto's help, some of the academy's players would have had a much harder time staying on the team. But Penn State's Dr. Amira Rose Davis says individual volunteers are not a solution to the larger systemic problems.
To be fair, I think this happens a lot. Like anytime somebody shares a GoFundMe and is like, this is such a feel-good story. That's not a feel-good story. It's an indictment of the system. When we see a young black boy get out of an under-resourced, over-policed community by way of athletic scholarship, that's not a feel-good story. It's an indictment of the system. Some of these ready-made digestible narratives, are they digestible because we swallowed what we were fed without paying attention to what the ingredients were?
Coming up, we'll tackle the digestible narrative that sports is a pathway to college for young black athletes. That's just ahead on Only a Game from NPR.